This is Smart Women, Smart Power, a podcast that features conversations with some of the world's most powerful women.
So I tell all my leaders, I want you out there conducting interesting, meaningful, relevant, cool, exciting, fascinating training so that when your soldiers return on Monday to school, to work, to their families, to their neighborhoods, wherever they go back to, they've got something to talk about.
We feature thought leaders at all career levels, where we explore, among other things, the many contributions that women make to the fields of international business, national security, foreign policy, and international development. Does having women in positions of power influence the outcomes of decisions in these fields? Why or why not? Join me, Dr. Kathleen McInnes, Director of the Smart Women, Smart Power Initiative at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, for these incredible conversations. This Smart Women, Smart Power episode is supported by Talos. We are just thrilled today to have Lieutenant General Jody Daniels with us here on the Smart Women, Smart Power podcast. Lieutenant General Daniels assumed her duties as the 34th Chief of the Army Reserve and 9th Commanding General of the U.S. Army Reserve Command in July 2020. So we're just thrilled to have you today to learn about you, your career, and your perspective on the Army Reserve, how it integrates with the total force, and how you've seen the roles and missions change or not over the course of your absolutely incredible career that took you to Kosovo and Iraq. We're talking before this started, like right there in the beginning. So you've seen a lot of really interesting things. So we're just delighted to have you here. So welcome.
So thank you so much. It's great to be here to have this conversation. I really look forward to it. I do have about 40 years of service now between active and reserve duty. I have been some of these exciting places, some less exciting places, some really boring places. The Army Reserve has, and the Army, and the, you know, how the military has been used has changed over the last 40 years.
Yeah.
So yeah, quite a bit has gone by during my tenure.
Right. And it's kind of mind-boggling when you think about the shifts that, you know, we've experienced. It's from the late 90s in particular to today, with, you know, between stabilization of the Balkans to global war on terror to now great power competition. Mm-hmm. It's just incredibly different strategic challenges and how the forces and then how the Army Reserve fits into that is just. So how did you find yourself in the military? Like, why did you choose this world, this career?
When I was in high school, all of my friends were applying for ROTC scholarships.
Oh.
And I went, sure, I'll be like one of the other kids and I'll just apply for scholarships.
It's a peer pressure.
Well, it wasn't peer pressure. They were just doing it. I was a little lemming at the time. I followed along. I'm like, all right, let's put all these applications. So I applied to Army, Navy, Air Force, all of them. Bad news for the Navy. They could never manage to figure out that I was female. And all of my mail was addressed to Dear Mr. Daniels. And I'm like, guys, you made me do a pap smear. Okay, if you can't figure out I'm freaking female, then you are not the service for me.
This is an early indicator.
And so I ended up getting an early acceptance scholarship by the Army. Mm-hmm. So I knew in the fall of my senior year that I had a 4-year scholarship.
Wow.
And that actually had schools sending me, hey, aren't you interested in coming to our school? Mm-hmm. Between SAT scores and, you know, a funded education, they were asking me to apply. Mm-hmm. That opened up opportunities to go to places I had not considered based on now having a more available funding.
Okay.
So I did my 4 years. The professor of military science and I didn't agree on just about anything. I attempted to jump and go over to the Air Force my junior year. And they're like, no, you've already started. You can't switch services. I'm like, all right, I'll just suck it up and continue on. Mm-hmm. And then continued on towards graduation and many other stories along the way. Here we are today. Quick anecdote. Partway through my career, I was very worried that as a female, my evaluations started talking about how I was caring. I cared for my soldiers, that I care. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is this a female characteristic? Am I going to be unsuccessful because I'm too caring? People see me as a caring. Does that translate to emotional? What does it mean? Am I baking a cake?
Like, what's happening?
So finally, I just said, you know what? I care, but I don't care. I care about my soldiers. I'm not going to worry that's what they're writing about me. I'm just going to be me. Because if this is who I am and how I operate, I'm either going to be successful as that or not.
Yeah.
And we'll move on.
Right.
And I just sort of said, okay, fine. I'm going to, you know, I care about people. I care, you know, and I'm just going to be me mm-hmm. and we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah. Authenticity.
And sure enough, it worked out just fine.
Yep. I feel
pretty confident in how that turned out.
I tend to agree.
But for a while, I was very nervous.
Yeah.
Because I was concerned that it was considered a female attribute.
Right.
As opposed to taking care of people.
Right. Well, and this notion for a long time, I would say until at least maybe 5 or 6 years ago-ish, I didn't want to be seen as the woman doing the things. I was an expert. Like, I wanted...
Professional.
Right. Because I could... It would only be a disadvantage in my worldview at the time. And actually, no. I've come to realize that it's a part
humanity,
of me.
That empathy... Humility. There's lots of things that we bring that as females, we happen, generically mm-hmm. speaking, you know, mm-hmm. we happen to do well. And it is, in fact, quite useful mm-hmm. and appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so as jumping forward to a question that I wanted to ask was, because we're here, how do you see women's integration in or in the Army Reserve? How do command climates reflect, you know, gender, not equity, but integration, maybe? Is that what I'm looking for?
Well, the Army Reserve, because it is what it, I'll come back to what we are.
Yeah.
We are 25% female.
Right.
Which is higher probably than any other service.
Mm-hmm.
So and then if you add in minorities and all those kinds of things, we're up to 50%. So it's a really diverse collection of people to begin with.
Yeah.
And it's not just at the lowest echelons. At the general officer ranks, women represent 22%.
Mm-hmm.
So they've made it through. And why is that the case? Well, the Army Reserve is primarily what we call the enablers.
Mm-hmm.
So the combat support, combat service support. So your logistics, your medical, your military police, your intel, engineers,
mm-hmm.
All of those skill sets that we can serve at in the civilian environment as well.
Yeah.
Very little infantry in the Army Reserve.
Mm-hmm.
One battalion. So not much.
Right.
No field artillery, no cavalry, no tanks, none of those kinds of, no armor. So we were already much easier to integrate women into the ranks.
Yeah.
And to be successful over many, many more years, where some of the other services, it's a late integration into those branches.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's why I think that we're already at 25%
right.
and continuing to either hold or go up,
right.
where others are still trying to get there.
Right. Because it's almost in the organization's DNA.
Right.
To just bring people from different skill sets.
Check.
To go from there.
And because we had no inhibitors to being in every single position in the Army Reserve.
Right. Right.
With the exception of that one battalion.
Right.
And now we even have a female ranger lieutenant out in that organization as well.
Wow. Wow. It's amazing. So at what point in your military career did you see yourself as becoming a general?
And I just laugh because so I was over in Iraq. This is a very classic conversation that I remember vividly. Mm-hmm. And I had a boss who said, "Hey, have you applied to the War College?" I'm like, "Sir, I just finished 7 years working on a PhD. I'm War College? Really?" And he's like, "You know, if you don't go to the War College or any of the Secret Service colleges, you could never make general." And I just kind of looked at him, you know, the head tilt, and I'm like, "General? You talking to me?" I was just like, I hadn't thought about, I mean, mm-hmm. I thought, I'm a lieutenant colonel. I'm probably, you know, I should be able to make colonel, but I had never even contemplated general.
Interesting.
It just was never something I thought about. It's kind of like I'd never thought about going to get a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
It just
mm-hmm.
wasn't on my radar. And so the fact that he was like, "You could make general? I could. Cool. Let me go apply to the War College."
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. And I was very fortunate that I was able to get a resident seat. And so I did that full time. And I did brigade command. I did a group command, and then I did a brigade command, and I did a number of other positions to sort of round myself out to make myself competitive.
Wow.
Because I had never really thought about positioning myself to be competitive. Mm-hmm. I was just doing some fun, interesting, cool, neat positions.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that he raised it was like, it was fascinating.
It's so important to have these mentors that can just see you. Not you know, just and cut through so much. Like, this is your potential. Like, I can see you in so many different amazing places. And sometimes it's so hard to see it ourselves.
And so that's a bit of advice that I give to those that ask me for advice,
mm-hmm.
which is find someone that can talk to you, not about your next position, but two away.
Yeah.
Because one away is kind of obvious. You kind of have a good sense of what that is. But two away, you may not realize all the opportunities, all the options, all the exciting different things that you could do. And there's other folks that can give you those insights. And maybe you need to do a little bit of legwork to position yourself to be eligible for those opportunities.
Right.
But if you don't even know they exist, you'll never get there. And so finding that person or people who can give you some insights into your strengths and what you should go after, really very helpful.
Wow. So in your current role, leading the U.S. Army Reserve, what are your priorities now looking forward? Ask that or flip that question a little bit or flip that paradigm a little bit. If you were going to say the Army Reserves, where it's going to be positioned, two positions from now, where would that be?
So I would call that 2030. So I look at sort of car after next.
Yep. Okay.
And I actually have looked at what that talent pool looks like to make sure that we're getting those people into the right billets to ensure that they're competitive when the time comes. They've had the right exposures and experiences and they're getting that look at different operational environments. So they're going to be ready.
Yeah.
And then in terms of capabilities, we're always looking at where should the Army Reserve go for 2030 as we look at multi-domain operations.
Okay.
And what can the Army Reserve bring to the fight? And interestingly enough, we're going to be doing a panel here in about a week looking at civilian career skills that could and should be used in the future. And how do we more rapidly integrate those civilian skills into the Army Reserve and the Army? What capabilities should we be looking at for 2030 and how do we bring them into the force? How do we recruit them? How do we grow them? How do we make sure that we can bring them in and utilize them?
So to put that more concretely, what kinds of skills are you looking at that aren't necessarily resonant in sufficient numbers in the force today?
If you look at the last 20 years, we didn't have data scientists. We didn't have people doing robotics or barely scratching robotics, artificial intelligence, blockchaining, all the cybersecurity professionals, 3D manufacturing, synthetic biology. Right. There's all kinds of emergent talent, emergent capabilities, technologies. And how do we leverage those to advantage our military for success in the future?
That is so fascinating to think about the evolution of these different disciplines and then how that might intersect with the future.
Energy.
Of the yeah.
The evolution of energy as we're looking at, you know, now we're looking at more electric. We're looking at how do we improve battery life, solar power, wind power, all those other, you know, what can we use wherever it is we happen to be deployed? How do we create ad hoc networks?
Right.
All those different, you know, move, shoot, communicate. How do we get all those done in the battle of the future?
Do you think about these things in a more functionally and then about how these things compete? Or do you think about these things in terms of the threat or strategic environment and how to match it against?
Because you've got a red team.
What's
in the realm of the possible. And you also look at a lot of science fiction. What are the creative ideas that people are coming up with that is like, how do we make that real?
Oh, you're singing my tune.
Oh, okay.
I'm such like a sci-fi. How do we use creativity to help us understand future threat environments and useful fiction, I guess they're calling it now.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. We've had this amazing conversation. And to wrap it up here at Smart Women, Smart Power, we like to ask the question, do you feel your gender has had an influence on the decisions you've made or the approaches that you've taken to decision? If so, why? And total, if not, why not?
I would initially say, so that this goes back to that caring question.
Yeah.
And did I worry about gender at all?
Right.
Partially, yes. I also think, ironically enough, that the spelling of my name helped me.
Really?
Because it's spelled with a Y, J-O-D-Y.
Huh.
And some people just assume that that's a male.
Interesting.
And so there's no, back in the day, there would have been no bias against it. If I'd been an I or an IE and they saw that name, there might have been an unconscious bias.
Wow.
So I'm gonna throw that out there as a hypothesis, no clue. But at the same time, I did work like nobody's business. I did really work hard in learning all of my positions and trying to make the most of it. Do I think I needed to work a little more, a little harder because I was the only female? Sometimes. Did I have to work a little harder because I was an intelligence officer and we were always the lowest rank on the staff?
Right.
So,
Is it bureaucracy that's pushing you to having to do this?
And yeah. In some cases, so it's a little of both.
Yeah.
And I called it, I referred to it as sort of sheer force of personality.
Yeah.
How do I get something done? How can I be the most effective in my role, whatever that may be? Is it, who do I need to influence? Whose help do I need to enlist? How do I get there? Are those female? I don't know. Are those survival? Maybe. Is it, you know, how do I get things done? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think that also for the Army Reserve and the other reservists, we come with that added advantage of having a civilian career and background.
Right.
So we get exposure to different leadership techniques, different teamwork yeah. techniques, building, and how do we get things done that you may or may not get on the active duty side. Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. since we get both, where you don't have an orders-based world mm-hmm. and you do have an orders-based world, how do you bring all of that together? And I think that has helped me succeed mm-hmm. also, right. working in these multiple different environments.
Mm-hmm. Which is so, so critical, especially as we right. look at strategic competition, interagency coordination, and just bringing it all together, having the ability to jump right. into these different perspectives and logic flows, right?
Oh, sure.
Right.
And so I had a military environment for the first 7 years. I was in an academic environment, mm-hmm. which is a whole different intellectual debate kind of place.
Yes, absolutely.
Precision of language matters. Mm-hmm. Writing matters a lot if
yes.
you're going to get published, and writing concisely, clearly, so that others can understand what you're trying to convey, being argumentative in a
constructive way.
You know, then I was in a research lab and we're writing proposals and doing basic research and thinking critically, all those critical skills, mm-hmm. analytical skills, and then more back into the military itself, doing intel and civil affairs. And just so all of these different things, I think the fact that I wasn't a one-trick pony.
Yeah.
I didn't stay in one particular career area. I did multiple different things and sort of came back to intel along the way,
yeah.
helped me see the world differently and helped me leverage all that bring to the fight. Because all their different backgrounds, it's not just about me, it's about us.
Right.
How do we make all of us successful?
Yeah, all of us. And how do we care for this big team that has all these different diverse perspectives? Well, it has been just wonderful to chat with you today. It's been so much fun. Thank you so much for joining us.
Can I give one final?
Oh, of course. Please.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
So one thing that you had asked about, so we didn't quite go there, was what are my priorities as I look at across the Army Reserve Force?
Yes, please.
And I do want to mention that because we got a little lazy during COVID. And we're doing a lot of telework, a lot of Zoom kinds of calls,
yeah.
a lot of virtual interactions. And so I've really been pushing the force to get back to doing what I call tough, realistic training done mm-hmm. safely.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So what does that mean to you?
Yeah. So I tell all my leaders, I want you out there conducting interesting, meaningful, relevant, cool, exciting, fascinating training mm-hmm. so that when your soldiers return on Monday to school, to work, to their families, to their neighborhoods, wherever they go back to, they've got something to talk about.
Right.
You've given them something that they can say, hey, I was out doing whatever it was they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they can now tell their stories.
Yeah.
That does two things. One is if they're excited about what you gave them to do over the weekend, or you taught them something, or they learned something, or they stood up and they were a leader, or they helped solve a problem, or whatever it was they did, they've got purpose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to retain them.
Yeah.
And then if they're telling these stories to other people who get excited by their enthusiasm and their passion and their energy, then that'll help with our retention, yeah. our recruiting piece.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm retaining and recruiting through this tough, realistic training done mm-hmm. safely.
Right.
That's that. And then the second piece of that is I worked really hard, and we've gotten our first lieutenant to captains being promoted more quickly. Because a lot of them were serving as company commanders. I'm like, well, let's just go ahead and promote them and pay them.
Right.
And now I'm working on my specialist to sergeant group.
Right.
Because they're a critical inflection point of staying in the service or departing.
Right.
And we, the Army Reserve, are really too slow in promoting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got an E5 and 5 mm-hmm. is the initiative for this final year of my tenure.
Interesting.
I want to bring the average down to 5 years or less
yeah.
that you have years of service before you become a sergeant.
Interesting. How are the demographics and dynamics and expectations of Gen Z playing into that?
They want purpose.
Yeah.
They want mission. They want excitement. They want to know why they're doing something.
Yeah.
And if we're not giving them something relevant to do, Mm-hmm. They're going to walk.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, why did you join the force? Sometimes it has to do with purpose. Sometimes it has to do with college education. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it has to do with, I want to learn a new skill, or I want to do something different from what I've been doing. And if we don't give them that experience and help them acquire those skills, then we're sort of failing them.
Right.
And they're going to walk away.
Right. So it's retention.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not retention, it's recruiting, because they're going to talk about what their experience was.
Right. So further recruiting.
I want them to be the messengers for the future to help bring others into the force. Because tell us, what opportunities did you get because of your service?
Yeah. Yeah. Purpose and care. Mm-hmm. Purpose and care.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This has been a ton of fun.
Absolutely.
Subscribe to the Smart Women Smart Power podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to great content. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Smart Women, or you can follow me on Twitter at KJMcInnes1. Thanks for listening, and join us next time. This Smart Women Smart Power episode is supported by Tallis.